This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Quick warning before we begin. This episode contains strong language.
This is where I'm a bit nervous, because this is where we... this is where we have a picture of her, one of the last known sightings of her.
Harley Street, the mecca of cosmetic surgery.
And then on the right is another picture of somebody who could be her post several surgeries.
2 weeks ago, we were sitting among hundreds of one-coiners at a beauty pageant. And now we've been told Dr. Ruja herself might have been there, but with a very different appearance.
We'd like to get your opinion on it, so...
One is the Dr. Ruja I know. The other, who is sitting at a dinner table with OneCoin bosses, has dyed blonde hair and significant amounts of plastic surgery.
What do you think?
In the first photo, she's got very low eyebrows.
Dr. Julian De Silva is one of the UK's top plastic surgeons.
And the after photograph, well, the eyebrows are really arched and high. Now, that looks like it's been lifted. The nose is definitely different as well. In terms of the lips, well, in both photos, the lips are relatively full and augmented, and it looks like, you know, the person's had some filler. The cheeks and the jawline, well, they're similar. But the one thing that is very difficult to change is your eyes, because your eyes are kind of set in the underlying bone. Things like the spacing of her eyes, which you can't change, well, you can't see a difference with that. You know, that is within the same ballpark.
This woman is, she's a multi-billionaire. She's been disappeared for over 2 years. Money is no object.
It's possible. I mean, those things could be changed.
It's almost too much to believe that she's just out in public, wandering around. You know, if she looks different, then she could be out somewhere and we might find her. We're so stupid, aren't we? Why weren't we looking out for people that might be her? It never crossed our mind, did it?
I hope you understand the vision of this company and how powerful it is. Thank you.
Episode 5, What Dreams May Come. Another early start for us. We were up at 5:30, just arrived at Amsterdam Central to chuck our bags in our hotel because we've got no idea what the situation's going to be. For over a month, we've been trying to speak with a man called Igor Alberts. For a while, he was the world's top seller of OneCoin. For a long while, he wouldn't answer our calls. Finally, he agreed, and we're off to meet him at his home in a very affluent neighbourhood on the outskirts of Amsterdam. Igor Alberts left OneCoin in January 2018. But while there, he was very close to the top leaders, including Ruja and her brother Konstantin. And after reading the FBI report and feeling uncomfortable at Miss One Life, we weren't quite sure what we were going to find. I cannot believe he's agreed to meet us. I'm shocked, aren't you?
I'm pretty shocked. Slight trepidation.
Yeah, he's a multi-millionaire. He's going to have... I just don't know. Don't know what it's going to be like at all. Let's go through the... Can I just quickly ask you about this this enormous bear? But things didn't turn out as expected.
You know, I dreamed about having a house like this and having animals.
Igor Alberts is larger than life in almost every single way.
We have panthers, rhinos, giraffes.
He's now giving us a tour of his massive garden that surrounds his massive eight-story mansion.
Zebras.
A black Aston Martin and black Maserati are parked outside.
Tigers.
He walks me round his light-up, life-size fiberglass collection of zoo animals.
We have Indian tigers. We have gorillas from Uganda. Andrea and I have been everywhere in the world. This is the house of dreams. This is what dreams may come, and it is a kingdom.
Igor is wearing only black and gold, and everything is Dolce & Gabbana. Black and gold shoes, black and gold pleated suit, black and gold shirt, black and gold sunglasses, and he has a thick black and gold ring on.
When you look at my clothes, they are disciplined.
Well, like your shoes, for example, are sort of matching a little bit.
Yes,
your...
they must match
not
with
only,
this.
I will tell you, but this you're not.
It's
put
in everything.
His socks, with his underwear, with his belt, with his clothes, everything.
That's Igor's wife, Andrea Simbala, who's originally from Italy.
He has socks with pink underwear, and if he dresses in pink, he will dress with pink everything.
I have it in everything.
They're a sort of motivational double act. She mouths and sometimes repeats along with what Igor's saying.
There must be always a balance in everything.
She's also a lot younger than him.
I lived in Italy and I was looking for an Italian woman. I had a woman in mind that was looking like Monica Bellucci. And I bought a painting because I had that clear. So when I go to Italy, I don't have to... I can just look at my photo. This is what I want.
When I saw him, I was like, oh my goodness, who is this crazy guy? He asked me, how much money are you making? What is your age? I'm like, okay, you are in Italy. Maybe don't understand. You don't ask the age and the money to a lady. And I thought he's quite arrogant. But anyway, the day after I saw him
direct.
On stage, he was very direct, completely different mentality.
Dutch.
Than
I fall immediately in love. This is our family tree because I have 12 children.
We have
two together, but I have a totally 12 children.
At the entrance to his house is a 10-foot-high wrought iron gate with their names emblazoned under the slogan, What Dreams May Come.
It's the house of dreams because here are dreams coming true. Exactly this house was on my list, but the single richest man in the Netherlands, this guy lived here. I lived in a village close by, but in a little house, you know. And every day I was running in these areas and everything, and I looked at all the, you know, like this. One day, that's really, I had nothing back then. I was completely broke. One day I will have a house like this. And today I can say everything, but really everything, from the watch till the car, from the house till the influence that we have on the world. Everything came true.
It's network marketing that you owe your success to.
Everything, network marketing.
Over 100 million people around the world do network marketing, and roughly 500,000 in the UK.
Signed up by a person. Somebody brought you in.
Make it simple. Hey, stop.
Maybe you've already drawn it up
there.
Yeah,
two football teams to make the goal.
Inside the house, Igor tries to show us how it works with a football analogy on a whiteboard.
I'm sort of struggling to understand.
It's all quite hard to follow.
I find the second person straight from...
But it's basically this. I pay £100 to start selling vitamin tablets to people directly. I sell a box to Georgia...
Thanks for my vitamins.
...and make a small cut. But then I recruit Georgia and Phil to start selling too. And I make a cut on their sales as well. They are now in what's called my downline. Now I am a network marketer.
And now we both recruit two people.
And we four each recruit two people.
And before too long...
We are all selling vitamin tablets.
This is the power of exponential growth. If that split happens 25 times, everyone in the UK is selling vitamin tablets. And me at the top, the person who started it off, well, I make a cut on everything. Because there are these different levels of people, network marketing is usually called multi-level marketing, or MLM. MLM is not illegal. Big companies like Amway and Herbalife use MLM techniques, but it can be very controversial because usually only a tiny number of people at the top make all the money. And it's notorious for wildly misleading promises and high-pressure targets. When there is nothing of value to sell and all the money is made by recruiting other people to sell, it is illegal. And then it goes by another name that's more familiar. A pyramid scheme. So you've got how many lines? I mean, if you imagine this person recruits, this person recruits, this person recruits. I mean, how many lines down does this go for you at the moment?
Thousands of levels deep. Thousands of deep.
Most people make very little or nothing from MLM. But those near the top can get very rich. And Igor has been near the top for years, selling things like beauty products and organic coffee. And the wealth he's made from being at the top is displayed all over his house.
And that was, hang on, is that you there?
Yes.
Is it you?
It's me. When I was younger, I had to bring the flowers around when I was 12 years old. And then I came to a house where people had the Swarovski crystals. That was in a very expensive neighborhood. And I loved it so much. And you know what the man said to me? When you don't know what to do with your money anymore, when you don't know what to do with your money, you give it to your wife and she buys those bullshit Swarovskis. But I said to the man, but it's beautiful. It's a dream. I would dream of having this. He said, one day, my friend, when you have enough money, you can buy it. And then at a certain moment, I made a fortune and I thought, it is ridiculous to spend 2,000 euros on some crystals. But on the other hand, I have enough money, I can afford it. And I started to collect it.
Love it. How many pieces are there in here?
I have no clue.
So how successful are you compared to the rest of the network marketing world?
Now, there's a lot of competition in it, and where do we are ranked? The number one in the world, I think. The easiest rating is how much do they earn.
Can I ask how much your income is? Is that an okay question to ask a Dutch person?
The last update was that we make 1.6 million per month, but on the 15th of June, they will update it. I think we go to around 2 million, around that. I think over the last 31 years, I made over $100 million in it.
$100 million in network marketing. No, by 2015, Iger was a successful and well-established multi-level marketer, working with MLM companies selling real products like Organo Gold and building up a huge team of sellers around him. Then he was approached by a friend with a new product to sell. OneCoin.
They invited us to go to Dubai.
In May 2015.
And I saw thousands of people. I thought, when they can all make so much money, it must really be something. Then I saw Dr. Ruja, and she had all princesses dresses, and she definitely knew what she was talking about. She had a vision and a mission and was extremely strong in it. What we did then, we gathered the teams together and we started to work like crazy. We made in our first month almost 90,000 euros out of nothing. Bang!
How are you selling? What are you actually doing? That's what I don't understand. What do you mean?
This is the company.
And they were buying from
the company. Let's say that we are here. We told to all the people, get straight into this company.
So these aren't just random new people. These are people that you've...
Leaders that we knew. We were a team of thousands of people already. Those people are all professional network marketeers. Out of the 10 biggest earners in network marketing were 6 from One Life.
Oh, wow. So this became the biggest product in network marketing.
The biggest company.
The biggest company.
The biggest company. The highest turnover. Another company came even close to. One Life came in the first year. In the first year, it made more millionaires than Amway ever did in their 75 years of history. because the best network marketers in the world came together and builded it.
Dr. Ruge's genius was to recognize that MLM and sellers like Igor Alberts were the perfect vehicle to market her fake coin. People bought OneCoin packages and became independent marketing associates. They would then sell packages to other people and recruit them into the network, making money via commissions from the people in their downline. 40% was paid in OneCoin, but 60% was paid in euros. OneCoin spread so far and so fast because it was being marketed by established MLM sellers, people who had scant knowledge about cryptocurrencies, but knew a lot about hyping up crowds and selling dreams to people. In emails obtained by the FBI, Dr. Ruge refers to this plan as the bitch of Wall Street meets MLM.
Hey! Come on!
Here's Kari Walrus, OneCoin's Europe ambassador.
How are you today?
Coming onto the stage in London in 2016.
We are one life. We are... We are... We are... That's the correct answer.
And here he is again, coming onto the stage in Berlin in 2014, promoting a multi-level marketing health product called Wellstar.
Good morning, Wellstar! Good morning, Wellstar!
I am the right.
And here's Igor Alberts, selling OneCoin in 2017.
They are.
And here's Igor again.
Are you ready?
In 2013, on the stage promoting Organigold.
Nothing is impossible. Because today, 47 years old, I become an Organo Gold Knight, and the sword is Excalibur!
And when people like Kari or Igor jump to a new company, they take their teams, which are often tens or even hundreds of thousands of MLMers, with them.
They're pretty genius how they put it together, actually.
Tim Curry, blockchain expert and OneCoin critic.
They decided to offer some of the biggest marketers in the MLM industry to come into OneCoin and recruit for them. So it's basically, think of it as an all-star soccer team or all-star baseball team or whatever. And they're like, okay, if we're the New York Giants, we have a bigger budget than any other baseball team in the United States, right? And so what we're going to do is we're going to buy the biggest rookies. We're going to take the biggest stars from some of these biggest teams. And that's how we're going to build this team, right? It's not that much different. You take the best talent, you pay them enough money, and you already know that their morals are compromised in most cases. And so it's perfect. And if they're getting a paycheck, they're happy to do it.
Just the new collection. It's not even in the shop.
Sellers have special names denoting their place in the OneCoin pyramid. Igor Alberts was right at the top. He was a crown diamond. That's the name for anyone who can generate 8 million euros worth of sales below them each month.
At the insurance. Oh, your clothes. Only your clothes part are 1 million insured.
Oh, my goodness.
All this year's all Dolce & Gabbana.
So these people that you're recruiting in early, these people are starting to make money too? They're starting
yes,
to make a lot.
Immediately.
So talk me through the sort of numbers you're dealing with now. So the first month...
90,000.
Almost.
And then how quickly did that increase?
Oh, the month after that were 120,000. that went up in no time. In a couple of months, we made a million. It went up to 2 million. It went up to 2.6 million. When we left the company, the day we resigned, we made 2.6 million.
I understood that some came in one coin and some came in commissions, or a proportion
yes.
of...
It was like 40-60%. Yeah. 40% were coming in coin.
You could only buy coins, so you buy from people that want to sell. 60% you get in your cash account and you can send it to any bank that you want in the world.
So the 40%, so when you said 2.6...
What was the total?
Including some that was...
Yes,
one coin.
Yes.
Yeah, because we made a lot of money. We started to buy more coins. We, how much did we have?
86 million coins, I think.
We invested a lot of money, millions, really millions. I don't think there is somebody else in the entire world that invested more money from their own pocket in it than we did. We made a lot of money, but of course we believed in it. I did the calculation. Wow. How many coins we needed to become the richest person on the planet. I said to Andrea, we need to build it up to 100 million coins. Because when this coin only goes to 100 euros, and we have 100 million of those coins, we are richer than Bill Gates. It's easy, it's mathematic. It's easy as that.
You thought honestly that you would one day become the richest person in the world with one coin?
Yes.
The math of this is just completely ridiculous. Every minute, 50,000 one coins are mined, right? Now, the value of those at today's quote-unquote price of 29.95 euros would be 1.5 million euros a minute is what they're claiming, right? And per hour, that's 89.85 million euros. And then per day, they're creating 2.15 billion euros out of thin air, right? And so the logic of it is just ridiculous. Now, if you follow how many coins had been mined for the first quote-unquote blockchain, and then from October 1st to present, it's nearing about 70 billion coins. If we take 70 billion coins and multiply that by the internal price of 29.95, you're looking at, I think it's like $1.8 trillion or $2.1 trillion, which is greater than all of the U.S. dollars in circulation on Earth, which is about $1.67 trillion.
It's obviously ludicrous. But the logic, or lack of it, isn't really the point. This is the big secret at the heart of OneCoin. It's an old-fashioned pyramid scheme with a fake cryptocurrency as the product. According to the authorities, something is an illegal pyramid scheme when the product being sold is valueless. To avoid the suggestion that they're an illegal pyramid scheme, OneCoin claims to be selling education packages. We have evidence that this was simply a cover. OneCoin promoters are often careful when they talk about how much money an investor can make.
This is Dr. Ruja Ignatova. I'm sitting now in the head office.
But we found a video from July 2016 where Dr. Ruja is promoting a new package.
It is a big package called the Ultimate Package. This package is 118,000 euro and it has 1,311,000 tokens and 111. And this package will generate over 2 million OneCoins. 2 million OneCoins.
For 118,000 euros, an investor could purchase 2 million OneCoin, each worth, according to the company, almost 7 euros at that time. So do the maths. Put 118,000 euros in, and a couple of months later, you will have 15 million euros, an almost immediate return of over 10,000%.
This coin has been going through the roof like crazy. We have so many people joining us and all these new networks that come in. We have no coins left for Latin America and India. So what can we do?
Dr. Ruja would frequently reinvent the basic rules of economics like this, and people didn't seem to care.
We will increase the number of one coins and we will go up to 120 billion coins.
After 2 years of selling coins, Dr. Ruja created a new blockchain and increased the total supply of one coin from 2 billion coins to 120 billion coins.
But what does this mean for all of you? You have coins, you have done so much. Oh my God, is my coin worth more now? Is it worth less?
Now, every economist would say that when you increase the supply of something, the price tends to go down. But not Dr. Ruja.
So now there are more coins. Is my coin now less valuable, more valuable? What happened? If we have more coins, we can expand our brand much faster and much better. More people will know about OneCoin and this will strengthen the brand. So on this side, your coin will become for sure more valuable.
She even doubled everyone's coins to huge applause. Why not?
For you, as existing members, whatever coins you have on your account or in the mining, if you have 1,000 coins on your account and 1,000 in the mining, what we will do as a company, we will double the coins on your account.
People in the audience thought they'd just become millionaires by the click of Ruja's fingers.
Thank you.
We've put our allegations to OneCoin. To our claim that nobody can trade OneCoin on an open exchange and the profits come only from commission for getting others on board, OneCoin replied,
"It is already untrue that OneCoin is not tradable. DealShaker is one of the major global trading platforms and has been continuously developed further by us. The fact that cryptocurrencies operate in a highly unregulated industry and have a reputation of being risky, pyramid, or bubble presents a serious barrier for their mass-scale adoption by most users and retailers. As stated many times, there are various reasons why cryptocurrencies could become the generally accepted payment means of the future."
We will be returning to DealShaker in a later episode, but are yet to see any evidence of it being a major global trading platform. To our claim that OneCoin is not a cryptocurrency because outside its ecosystem it has no value, and that its nominal price is not determined by supply and demand, but is manipulated and set internally, they said,
"OneCoin verifiably fulfills all criteria of the definition of a cryptocurrency, and also those of a transparent pricing that is in line with the common market."
To our claim that OneCoin has no true verifiable blockchain, they said,
"It is incorrect. OneCoin has a particularly innovative system of a centralized blockchain. It has a number of significant advantages compared to other less innovative technological concepts of the decentralized blockchain."
When asked for further comment, OneCoin told us that we had
prepared an 8-part podcast series with information provided by many haters, former employees and sanctioned IMAs for fraud or TNC violations who chase personal gain.
And that
for now, no further comments will be made.
We will continue to put our claims to OneCoin and include any responses in later episodes. In August 2019, after we'd carefully put the word out in a couple of online groups, we were approached by two people who could help us make sense of how the OneCoin pyramid spread. Two OneCoin sellers based in the UK. We can't tell you their names or what rank they were, and their voices are played by actors.
"Whatever commission I used to get, I bought more and more packages because my belief was there. My belief was there. It would be my future."
"How many coins did you have?"
"Many millions."
"And each of them was worth $29.95, so you must have been a multi-millionaire."
"Billionaire."
"You're a billionaire?"
"That's what the people believe. They believe in OneCoin. That is what people believe."
"I used to believe."
They left the company in spring this year, after reading the FBI charges against Constantine, after really reading them.
"We were totally shocked. Before then, we never went through the FBI documents or anything."
"The problem is, the OneCoin believers, they're fed so much information, I'm sure 99% of the people have never even read the report. And even if they had, they'll just say it's from the haters. I asked a question, I raise the voice. They stopped answering. And then they froze my accounts.
I communicated with every single leader, told them not to promote it. Nobody was listening. We were a bunch of clowns, seriously, because we never used to go inside to find the truth. For the last 2 years, you can make money in the system, but you cannot withdraw a single pence.
The only possible way to get money is to bring new people, and if those people buy packages. In any system, any networking system, very few people make money.
How many people do you think have invested in the UK?
Over 70,000.
I think it's more than that. 60,000 was the number 2 years back. That 60,000 is not updated.
Here's a strange thing. Once we stopped recording, we left the equipment running.
Yeah, I've heard of OneCoin. It's,
And one of the actors, Icky, started talking about OneCoin.
The religious communities actually made a big deal of it. The religious leaders are saying it's okay, certified from a religious standpoint to invest in it.
And do you know people yourself who have invested?
Yes. And brainwashed is a... Oh, God. It's a big cult. It's a big cult.
Muslim groups in particular seem to have been affected in the UK. For Muslims, there are various religious rules about investing money, mostly relating to whether an investment accrues interest, which is called usury, and that's not allowed. Scholars sometimes offer guidance about how to invest in a way that's halal, meaning it's compliant with Sharia, which is Islamic law.
I'm a Mufti Amjad Muhammad.
Mufti Amjad Muhammad is a scholar from Bradford.
The real kind of push for cryptocurrency is that it's decentralized from the banks. We find within traditional Islam and historical Islam that gold and silver were the means of trade. Now, gold and silver weren't controlled by anybody. You only had the gold that you had. So there's no such thing as sort of inflation, or you didn't have to manage your money because you weren't producing gold. So gold was finite. With regards to Bitcoin, that was also its great kind of push, that there would be only a certain amount of cryptocurrency that could be mined, and that's all that would exist. The second kind of push that was made was that it's not controlled by banks, because the bankers are just lining their own pockets. They have no care or interest for the user. Usury was the big card that the cryptocurrencies can play with regards to Islamic finance. Gaining more than you actually gave, or vice versa. This is considered as a serious issue within Islamic finance, based upon the fact that there's disparity and it's taking advantage of people in difficult circumstances. The only thing then would be, is it halal? If you have a few Muslims on there, I guess it helps. If you have a little certificate on there, well, I guess it helps. So when we see somebody saying it's halal, then that's great. It justifies one's conscience. So if I invite somebody in, and yeah, they might make a loss. Yeah, that might happen, but it's halal. I'm not doing anything wrong. It's not haram. I'm not doing anything wrong. So once you keep repeating that mantra to yourself, then that's what happens.
And guess what? OneCoin did have a certificate saying they were Sharia compliant that was issued from Pakistan.
What Sharia compliant is supposed to mean is that somebody has carried out thorough research, gone through all the conditions, gone through all the terms with a fine-tooth comb. There was no evidence of any research whatsoever. It was just a blank certificate saying, this is okay.
Amjad issued a fatwa against this, a ruling that OneCoin was not halal. And then...
within weeks, the conditions which I had highlighted as being problematic changed. So clearly, somebody was keeping a watching brief of what I was doing. Because I only picked a couple in the initial fatwa. However, OneCoin does not actually exist. So I can easily make any form of conditions for something when the actual thing does not exist. It's a fraud. I would say engaging in OneCoin compensation plan is not Sharia compliant.
Mufti Amjad saw how fast OneCoin spread within the Muslim community.
I would say it is significantly high. Once it kind of gets into the community, and then the community being slightly tight-knit, it's kind of like a bit like a wildfire in that it spreads very, very quickly over a very short period of time. This lady got in touch with me, and not only had she invested whatever little she had, she'd also invested money from her close family members, and I'm talking immediate family members. But the person who had introduced her to OneCoin was also an immediate family member. I wouldn't be surprised if family members have not even gone to the police, because having this kind of family bond They think by me doing that, my cousin could go to jail or my brother could go to jail. And some people have mentioned to me that their relatives will just say to them that, well, you know, you made a choice, I didn't force you. It stops being a kind of clinical, intellectual thing and it becomes an emotional thing. Don't you trust me? Don't you believe me?
Because pyramid selling spreads through networks of people, scammers are often recruiting those closest to them. That means you can't just disappear. You're tied to the people you scammed. They know who you are.
Last 2 or 3 months, what we're going through, you can't imagine.
The UK whistleblowers again.
Mix of text messages, phone calls. You traitor, you hater.
You are the devil.
They're going to be murders and suicides.
You can never be blamed for believing in something. I had no clue that it could be false. Nobody was asking about if the blockchain is there or not. Even when you would have shown me the blockchain, I didn't even know what is a blockchain.
Isn't that a problem? I mean, you said you were very convinced, you know, meeting her persuaded you.
Yeah,
but also that you still didn't know the technical details of it.
I tell you, I have here a lot of cars. You've seen the cars.
I've seen some of the cars. I saw Aston Martin.
He's black, he's beautiful, he drives 330 kilometers. He's made by hand by Mr. Hartman. Yeah, but what engine is in it? I have no clue. How many horsepowers does she... I have no clue. It's an Aston Martin. Is that not enough?
Aston Martin. You just have to like it and have it in your head. But if you were going to sell that Aston Martin, you'd probably think, I want to double check that the engine is the right one and the... Yeah.
I trust that it's good. Yeah.
I trust when I buy stuff in the supermarket... Yeah. I trust that they don't sell me bullshit. I have no clue about cryptocurrency at all, nothing. But what I saw is a lot of people that had a lot of knowledge about it. I see those people making the money. What doubt can I have?
Igor Alberts and Andrea Simbala didn't leave OneCoin until January 2018, 3 months after Dr. Ruja disappeared. They say it was after, you guessed it, numerous requests to see the blockchain, which were denied.
You know, when you dream about, when you think that you can make with 100 euros, 1,000 euros or 10,000, of course there's the risk that you can lose it as well. With speculation, you must always understand that you can make money and you can lose money.
You know, you've got this lovely house and you've done so well. And some of that money has come from people that maybe didn't know as much, they didn't have as much information about the risk.
We invested millions in it as well, eh?
Did you also feel at any point some form of guilt? I mean, the people that had invested in, that you had recruited, some of whom did lose their money.
No.
I mean, did you think about them?
Let's say it like that. I felt responsibility. And I said it before, not guilt, because I didn't join when I didn't believe. I'm pretty sure that we put more money in the network than any in the coins than anybody else.
The way you figure out responsibility, people have to know that you can lose as well as win. But I just wonder whether actually in some places it wasn't sold like that. It was sold as you're always going to make money. You're always going to keep making money. Look how brilliant the line is always going up.
We believe there's always, when it works, you make a fortune. But when it doesn't work, you lose it.
Some of the people I'm saying, they maybe didn't know as much, they didn't have as much information about the risk. They weren't as confident about it. They weren't as well educated.
But then a lot of the people that invested high amounts, they invested 100 euro, 50.
Yeah, it was a lot of money to them.
That is the risk of life.
But what would you say to someone who said, but maybe you should have known earlier. Maybe you should have spotted the signs. You should have looked into it more. Or you should have...
Already more than 1 year and a half ago, it was not so many...
When we left, it was not that wild yet. And the truth is, when we would have known it 1 month earlier, we would have left 1 month earlier. When we would have known it 1 year earlier...
So when
you ask me, would you have stopped earlier when you would have known it earlier? Absolutely. Absolutely.
No, that wasn't. That's not quite the question. But it's more what would you say to somebody who said you should have known? You know, you should have looked into it more. You should have researched more. To someone who says that to you, and they must have said that to you before. What do you say to them?
Then I ask them, are you a victim? Why didn't you do it yourself? Who is to blame?
Igor makes for a strange kind of victim sitting there in his Dolce & Gabbana suits. But Igor Albert's story of selling cryptocurrencies isn't over just yet. You'll be meeting him again in a later episode. Jen McAdam invested 10,000 euros in OneCoin, but she also convinced her friends and family to invest 250,000 euros of their money. And after learning about how the pyramid scheme worked, there was something we had to ask her. Jen came into the studio in London on the day this series was released. One question, Jen, that some people will have is, were you selling packages to people that you knew?
Yeah.
So how much did you make from that?
Over a year's period, the commission of 3,000 euros, 60% of that goes into a cash account, 40% of it goes into OneCoin takes that automatically, and they say that they're purchasing coins for you. So 1,800 was what I received over that year period, which I then repurchased more OneCoin packages out that 1,800.
You obviously had an incentive to bring people in so you could make a commission.
Well, initially, I only wanted to invest. I believed what I was told. And when I spoke about it to friends, that's what I told them. And then what they heard, that's what they told their friends. This happened so quickly, over a couple of months. Do I feel guilty? Of course I do. That'll never leave me. It's a heavy burden to bear. That's why I want answers. I would love them to be able to, we'd be able to get their money back, It's a quarter of a million.
Was it still the cryptocurrency that made you want to invest, or the chance of getting commission?
It was a crypto. I only wanted to invest. That's all I wanted. And I think for most, it is the investment, it's the profit. At that time, Bitcoin, you're getting told the story. Oh, remember Bitcoin, it was 10 cent when it first started. And now it's sitting, way back in 2016, I think it was about 450. And they say, well, this is, OneCoin has more members than Bitcoin. We're the Bitcoin colour. It's going to be the Bitcoin colour. OneCoin is going to be the number one cryptocurrency. The value is just going to continue. I just didn't have the knowledge about cryptocurrency, which what I do now, I didn't have that. So it seemed it was possible.
There'll probably be some people listening that will say, oh, well, you were just being too greedy.
Yeah,
What do you say to them?
I say to them that I was going through some financial hardships. Because at night I used to worry, I have a family, and how can I now, if something was to happen to me, how am I going to, how can I make sure they're going to be all right? So for me, when this came along, I thought, oh, my prayers have been answered. So I don't know if people will understand that, but that's the truth.
I mean, this podcast has only been public knowledge for about 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the messages that you've received so far, what have you got?
Online?
Yeah.
Death threats.
galore this week since I found out about the BBC podcast. Before I came down to London, I had Police Scotland because of the death threats, I was told to report it.
What were people saying?
You won't be living within the next few days. There was sexual abuse threats as well that I don't even want to repeat it. It's no nice at all. And that my life was going to end. I hope you enjoy lying in your bed one last night and things like this. If sometimes I feel as though I'm in a nightmare that I just can't wake up from. I try to contain it because of my loved ones, not to show them that I'm worried, but I don't sleep. I just worry constantly.
Jen McAdams stopped promoting OneCoin in early 2017 as soon as she realised it was all a scam, and she went public about her concerns at some cost to herself. Iger Albert stopped in early 2018. Our whistleblowers were still selling OneCoin up to early 2019. How high up the pyramid do you go before you're no longer a victim? How long do you keep selling before you're simply a scammer? With pyramid selling, I'm not sure there's a simple answer to those questions. But at least they've all stopped now. Others in the UK, however, have not. There are people here still promoting an exchange where you will soon be able to trade your OneCoin for usable money.
It's still growing. Even last week I saw someone bought a tycoon package. From next month or next week, there'll be a new wave in selling OneCoin.
And they just had an event in Bali which generated huge interest.
Yeah, and they will sell more packages because now they've created a scene. We're gonna exchange. We are going to exchange. We're gonna exchange. Even yesterday in the official publication, they say the exchange is ready to be approved. Let's bring in new people. Let's bring in more sales.
There is always a reason for why the exchange hasn't happened. On 9th January 2017, they were waiting for the audit from the central bank. Now we have the exchange, but we need a final push. We need to sell more power packs.
They give us some numbers and names of current UK promoters.
One more question. Where do you think Dr. Ruja is now?
Initially, Constantine used to say that she needs some rest, but that she's still operating everything from the house. Even in December last year, he said the same thing in the Paris event, publicly.
We were told that for family reasons she was stepping aside, so we had to respect her privacy.
But she is connected. She is helping Constantine.
People believe that Dr. Ruja is running the company, but Dr. Ruja, she's like a queen, and there'll be days when she'll come and she'll lead again.
Like a second coming. People were giving Constantine presents to give to Ruja.
Until March, we were told she was living in London.
Yeah, we were given this information that she was living in the UK.
She got the penthouse. Knightsbridge was the office, but she has a penthouse as well.
So you were told she was living here?
We were told she's here, don't worry. Constantine said he was getting information twice a week from Ruja.
Oh, we don't believe that anymore now.
Well, what do you believe now?
What I believe strongly is it is a criminal organisation. We were just the workers.
The problem with this company is, until you step outside from it, you won't understand what's going on. You understand? Because the picture they create is so beautiful. It's a brilliant picture.
There's something strangely beautiful about the OneCoin scam. It's like the perfect scam. It combines the hype and terminology of cryptocurrencies and the hard-nosed MLM selling of people like Igor Alberts. It uses glamorous events and household brands to create the veneer of respectability and protects it with a religious-like zeal. And who could ever doubt the intentions of the trustworthy Dr. Ruja? Maybe it was too perfect. In the Department of Justice charges against Dr. Ruja and her brother Constantine, There's an email that they say is written by Dr. Ruja to one of her senior team.
I'm personally very unhappy and feel that the future, regardless of what happens with OneCoin, is not really an exciting one and nothing to be proud of.
Her words are read by Desislava Stefanova.
I have done many bad things in my life, many stupid things, many things that were borderline, but nothing that was I partially ashamed of, and it actually destroys part of who I am. The damage is done. I have to somehow live with it. But it is something that really upsets me.
Is it possible that OneCoin grew faster than Dr. Ruja expected, propelled along by MLM? That she lost control? Maybe that's why she asked Bjorn Bjerke in 2016 to build her a blockchain. Maybe it's not only the authorities that she's running from. We put this to Bjorn, the blockchain developer who turned down a job with OneCoin in 2016. Do you think it's possible that this almost ran out of her control? This got much bigger than she thought that it would?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've talked to people that have been there from the beginning. They all say that this was a quick couple of bucks to make. This was never supposed to be a billion-dollar scam. I think she started getting scared that this is going out of control. She tried to stop OneCoin because they didn't want to get too big. And once OneCoin was running above 10 million, 20 million, 30 million, something happened where she was unable to stop it. When you talk about the amount of money that's been put into OneCoin, the recent number that I have is 15.8 billion euros.
What? What? 15.8 billion euros?
Yes. She was just the face. The network around them, as in behind them, said, no, you are going to follow this through and you're going to take as much money as you can. We're going to ride this horse as long as we can. And I think she was so scared in the fall of 2017 that she decided to skip.
They raised so much money. 15.4 or 15.7 billion.
We'd heard, well, we'd read that it was only four billion.
That is maybe an area, but only in China they raised more than 10 billion.
Oh, 10 billion.
Yes.
The total is over
15 billion, yes. Tremendously. The amount you read was only in our team. And we were only 10% of the total company. October 2017, over 15 billion, 15.4 billion. So it can even be way more.
15 billion is far bigger than we'd heard before, and at this stage, it's impossible to know.
How much of that money is with Dr. Ruja?
No, we have heard that she took 7, 8 billion to Russia, and that's how she gets immunity. There is 4 billion blocked on accounts all over the world, and there's still a big part missing.
Let me ask you about Ruja Sutton and where you think she might be.
There are a lot of theories. The first theory was that she is arrested, but we couldn't figure it out. She's kidnapped. Can be that she's kidnapped. I don't know if it's true. I met the mother, by the way. The mother was very nice, and the mother was working for the daughter. So the mother was, you know, when you wanted to go into the office of Dr. Ruja, in front of the door was the desk of the mother. You could not go in the office without passing the mother.
What's your theory?
I looked at many theories, and from what I've heard, she must have made a deal with somebody. She's living in Russia. I have seen sometimes pictures that she holds a Russian and an Ukrainian passport. I've heard from reliable sources that she travels back between Russia and Dubai. But, you know, you never know what is behind, because when we started, there were very influential people behind.
Would you tell us anything about who they are?
No, I cannot tell that because I don't want to take that risk with our lives.
We've now been told that Dr. Ruja might be in the following places: London, Russia, Dubai, and maybe Romania. She might also have changed her appearance.
Testing, 2-3, 2-3, testing, 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 testing. Is that all right?
Okay. We decide it's time to call in a professional.
I specialise in finding people. That is my core speciality.
Outside a cafe in central London, we meet private investigator Alan McLean.
Let me just talk you through the last known sighting and see if any of this makes sense to you. She takes a flight from Sofia to Athens in October 2017, and then suddenly she disappears. And no one knows what she did once she got to Athens.
What was her lifestyle? That's the most important thing of all. What was her lifestyle? Because no matter how good you are at evading anyone, we will all leave a pattern. What type of food you eat, so that would determine what restaurant she went to. It's unlikely she wants to change her lifestyle. Very unlikely she wants to change her lifestyle. I would suggest have a look at the yachts that were bought in Athens. That would be my starting point. She already had a yacht, and that's what takes me towards the sea, yes? Go to Athens. You can buy some massive yachts out there. That is the yacht place. Now, we're not talking about some yacht that Robinson Crusoe had. This lady could buy a ship beyond belief.
What would you do? What would you do if this was your case? What sort of techniques would you be employing?
If you were paying me £70 an hour, I could maybe start to tell you.
£70 an hour?
That would be for you half price. Trace where she's been on that yacht that she owns. Where is her yacht based at the moment?
Sozopol. Sozopol in Bulgaria, on the coast of Bulgaria.
What you want to be trying to do is getting the tracker off that.
What do you mean getting the... How am I going to get the tracker off the yacht?
It can be done. In my opinion, this is for what it's worth. Mediterranean. She's moving around the Mediterranean.
That seems very risky. That seems very close. I mean, that's still in the heart of the European Union.
I live 2 hours away from where you are now, yes? I never heard of this woman. I never heard of this woman. If this woman walked in here now, yeah, how many people would know she was here?
We'd know.
Sometimes when you're focused in an investigation, you get clouded by the fact that you don't realise that outside of there, nobody knows her. You know, what would stop her going into Monte Carlo, walking into a restaurant, having a nice meal and a nice dance and a night, going to the casino and having a night out? Who would know her? She would just be another rich woman.
I guess I thought because the FBI are after her, she would gravitate to a country where there's no extradition treaty. So Russia, Dubai, somewhere like that.
It's possible, but when you're out at sea, there's no extradition from the middle of the sea. The only thing I would stay away from Russia is, who wants to live in minus 40? Who would want to live there? The one thing that I would look at, and they'll tell you this, you're sort of coming to the end of this, and I'll tell you something I would seriously look at. How close was she to your family before this all started? Because if she was a family person, that is hard to go away and disassociate yourself from your family.
Is she going to be currently sitting there nervously expecting someone to find her, or do you think she's just living the high life, not worrying about it?
No, people, after a while, at the beginning she would have been maybe a bit, but now she'll have got her feet under the table, there's a routine. Now, when you say about the FBI, for me, she wouldn't even be worried about the FBI investigation. She'd be more worried about journalists finding her. You're like myself, you'll give a dog a bone. Yous will be chasing this. I know you'll have sleepless nights over this, yeah? I can assure you somebody in the FBI isn't having sleepless nights over this, but I bet you two have. I wouldn't dwell too much in the FBI because the best information is the legwork. Get on the ground, get on the docks, get on the ports and talk to the lower level. Don't talk to people that she's probably paid off. Talk to the workers there. Talk to the people who might have seen her in the cafes and the restaurants and that. There was a reason she flew to Athens and then disappeared. There had to be somebody see her last. Somebody. Somebody in Athens has seen her. If I was you, I'd keep on this because you're probably not as far away from it as you think.
Next time, we dig into Dr. Ruja's past.
The night she disappeared, one day she was there, next day she was gone. Laptops were broken in the factory, papers vanished. It made for us the impression that somebody tried to hide something.
the factory was dead.
Most of the people just were out of work. 140 families.
And a new whistleblower steps forward.
I'm probably responsible more than anybody else for keeping this alive for so long. And that's something I've got to live with. Kept a lot of people believing longer than they should have.
The Missing Crypto Queen was presented by me, Jamie Bartlett. It was co-written and researched by me, Jamie Bartlett, and Georgia Catt. And Georgia Catt is the producer. Philip Sellers is the editor. And the amazing music you're hearing is by Phil Channel and Desislava Stefanova and the London Bulgarian Choir. It is a Radio Documentaries production for BBC Sounds. Thanks very much for listening. And remember, we want to get the word out about OneCoin. So if you tell just two people to subscribe, and they tell two friends to subscribe, and then those four tell two people, and those eight tell two people, and then those 16 tell two people, and those 32 tell two people,
and then those 64 tell two people, and those 128 tell two people, and those 200...
There's another podcast I want to recommend to you. Like this one, it's about an investigation and one that is seeking your help. It's about a woman who died in terrible circumstances in 1970, and to this day we don't know who she was. Her badly burnt body was found on a remote mountainside in Norway, and labels had been cut off some of her clothes. It's thought she used multiple identities. Perhaps even she was a spy. It's called Death in Ice Valley, and it's made by our colleagues at the BBC World Service and NRK in Norway. You know the drill. Search for Death in Ice Valley on BBC Sounds or wherever you're listening to this.